All right, here's what you're going to learn in this program. You're going to find out that Matthew Inman, the person who you're about to listen to, built a whole dating website from scratch in 66.5 hours. Now, why should that matter to you? Because if you're building anything online, you need to hear how he built his site quickly. You need to learn how he made the decisions of what to include in a site and what to keep out of a site, because you have to figure out how to build your site with the core features. And if you can learn from somebody who's done that quickly, then you could copy a lot of his techniques and apply it to your business. You're also going to find out how he promoted it, what he did to get other bloggers to link to it. You're going to find out, too, about some of the clever tricks that he used to get traffic to his website. For example, he created a series of quizzes where every time somebody took a quiz, they were encouraged to link back to his website, and you'll find out how he got them to do that, how he got them to link back to his website. Now, everything that we did here, you can copy. I know that you may not be a developer like Matthew, so I asked him, where can you hire a developer like Matthew? I know you may not be the writer that he is, so I asked him, where do you go to hire that kind of writer? And because I care about dollars and cents, I asked him to tell you how much it's going to cost you to hire somebody like that, because I want you to be able to put this into your mental calculation about how much it's going to cost you to build your business, or so you can actually write it down and figure out what your business is going to cost. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, and I bring people like Matthew Inman here to teach you, because they're better than ordinary teachers. These aren't people who are sitting in some office somewhere or in front of a classroom all day teaching. They're people who are in business every single day, and every single day they've got to prove their abilities. And they do. And every once in a while they come on a program like this and they teach you what they know. They do it as a favor to me. And they do it as a favor and a help to you. So appreciate this. Soak up as much of this knowledge as possible. And better still, use as much of this knowledge as possible, because I go out of my way to get you information that's useful. No theories here, just real tactics. To the point of sometimes I do this by video, Skype, by the way. Sometimes I look at the person who I interview and I can see that they're saying, really, you want me to go to this kind of detail? You want to know exactly how much it's going to cost to hire a developer? Go do the homework yourself. I could see that in their eyes, but you know what? I'm doing the homework for you right here by asking them, by spending time on the details, so that you don't have to spend time on these details later, so that you can go out there and use the information. All right, this is a longer introduction than I like to go to, so I'm going to be quiet, and I'm going to play the interview with Matthew Inman. Matthew, what's Mingle 2?
Mingle 2 is a free online dating site. It was something I started a few years ago. We basically have an entirely free model. The whole site's really, really easy to use. It's something I built myself kind of as a hobby, and that's who I work for now full time.
All right. One of the impressive things about it is that you took, I think, 66 and a half hours to build it?
Originally, yeah. I prototyped the site from concept to launch in 66 and a half hours. They were consecutive. I had another job that was full-time, so it was kind of a night and weekend thing. But as I was building it, I realized how fast it was going, so I decided to kind of make like a log of how long it was taking, so it ended up being about that much time.
Why did you decide to build a dating site?
Basically, I saw what Plenty of Fish was doing. They're a competitor, and I saw that one guy had kind of pulled this off, and in my opinion, I didn't think his site was very good, and I knew I could reproduce it, so... And I saw his AdSense earnings. So the combination of all those things, I was like, well, let's give this a shot and see what I can do. So,
do you remember how much money he said that he made when you found out about him? I forget the check. Do you remember how big his check was? I forget what it was, but he held up a big check.
Yeah, I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was a six-figure check. Mm-hmm. The one picture I saw. So it was at least 100 grand, something like that. And then he was boasting... I can't remember what it was. I think he was making eight figures a year. So it was enough to be like, hey, I want to do that too.
All right. So how much planning went into building this business?
Originally, I'm kind of a like shoot from the hip kind of guy when it comes to business. So I got kind of a site architecture written down. I scribbled some notes, but basically I just kind of ran with it. So there wasn't a whole lot of planning. And the marketing aspect of it, I certainly didn't plan. I actually kind of stumbled into that on accident. So...
All right, before we get into the marketing, I want to know how you decided what to put into the site and what not to put into the site. I see a lot of people building websites. They email them over to me and they say, Andrew, I'm not ready to launch. I still have to add more features and it still has to look a lot nicer. And they'll do this for months where they just keep sending me updates, but they won't launch. And here within within 70 hours you launched. So how'd you know what features to put in?
I signed up for like 12 dating sites and used all of them to the point where I felt like I knew what I wanted. And I built it based on that. And I think that was a good reflection of what everybody else wanted too. So that was basically the gist of it.
But there's so many different features in dating sites today. You can message people, you could friend people, you could, what else could you do? You could add, I think, videos, you could add lots of pictures, you can hot or not people. How'd you decide which ones you were going to add and which ones you were going to keep out?
I tried to keep it as simple as possible. A dating site as a product is actually pretty simple. You know, all you essentially need is some kind of profile and a way to search within your area geographically. So I tried to stick to that core principle, like have a set of users and let them upload photos, give their basic information, and then search from there. And I knew since I was building it myself, I had to keep it simple. I couldn't integrate video. I couldn't integrate chat. So I just stuck to that. I'm a big fan of the KISS principle, the keep it simple, stupid. Like, I just constantly tell myself to do that. So I stripped out all the fun stuff and kept it real, real tight, so...
Was there a feature that you kind of wanted to put in that you had to fight yourself to keep out?
I definitely wanted to add, the first prototype version of the site had no chatting platform, and I really wanted something like that where you instantly could chat with someone. I just didn't have the time to build that or to find a third party that could integrate quickly. But we have it now, so it just took time.
Okay, and of all the features that you built in, what did you realize later was the most important one? Was there anything that took you by surprise that people really loved that you didn't realize they'd care about?
Yeah, when you view a profile on my site or you do any kind of action on somebody's profile, like message somebody or they message you, we have a history feed similar to Facebook's history feed where it says what everybody's up to. And we found that that's really engaging. People love that because they just can instantly sign up for the site and see, oh, someone viewed my profile. Even if they don't message them, it makes them feel immersed. So that was one of the best features we had.
All right. And what about looks? Plenty of Fish is, and it was when you and I first saw it, it was ugly.
Yeah.
How important was design and looks?
To be honest, for me, I designed it and tried to make it look great, and it was actually a benefit there that most people don't know about. For me to rank my site in search engines, I need links, and when I designed it, I got a lot of links from CSS galleries, design blogs, so I actually was able to garner links to my site because of the design. People were more likely to link to it because of that, because they love the way it looked. So that was, in my opinion, the most short-sighted benefit. You know, the longer-term one was that people fell in love with the brand. They love the website. I had people saying, I love your site. I'm going to use it. I'm not even single, and I want to use it and tell my friends about it just because I'm, you know, I love what you've done here. So,
how did the design sites even know to point to you, to tell their users that you had a beautiful design?
When I started the site, I launched a big viral marketing campaign. So I was able to draw in tons of traffic to it. So that just kind of came from there, most of it. And then usually if you get picked up by one or two CSS or design blogs, they kind of spread to all the others.
Okay, so let's talk about the viral marketing that you did. What was the first thing that you did to get traffic?
I had done a lot of link bait previously when I used to work at SEOmoz. That was blog bait, where you write a blog post that's sensational and or funny or interesting, like the kind of stuff you'd see on Dig, and you try and get traffic to that. I started doing it with Mingle, too, and the first one I made was called How Dating My Ex-Girlfriend Was Like Playing Doom 2 on Nightmare Mode. And it compared a very difficult setting of an old video game to this girl I dated. And it did really well. I think it got maybe 500,000 page views and maybe a couple thousand links. But I wasn't ranking in the search engines for anything. The idea there was I wanted links to this blog post about dating so that if someone Googled the word dating or some other dating-related keyword, they would see my site. The problem was with that kind of link bait is that I didn't really get enough links with the specific anchor text I needed. So I started creating quizzes. And the first one I created
Wait, before
was,
we even go to that.
You don't want to touch that yet?
not yet. I want to make sure to cover everything in as much detail as I can get.
Sure, sure.
So you were able to write a few blog posts that people link to and that people dug and got traffic. Is that something that somebody watching this can say, you know, I'm not as clever as Matthew, I'm not as great a writer as he is, I want to hire it out? Can they hire that kind of thing out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always say the best place to find those kinds of people too aren't necessarily in the marketing industry or SEO industry, but look like the kind of people that write best of Craigslist posts, or the kind of artists who draw t-shirts for Threadless, like highly creative people who are out there who don't necessarily know what link bait or SEO are.
Okay.
Those are the kind of people you want to look
Now, how
for.
do you
And then on the
find them?
marketing side, try posting on Craigslist, look at Freelance Switch. Look at some of the design communities, some of the writing communities, places like that. Take those people and then couple that with a marketing campaign. So find someone like me or some of the other guys that do social media marketing to promote it for you, which is when they basically give you kind of an edge, if you want to get it on Dig or StumbleUpon or Reddit or whatever site.
Okay, so first thing they do is they go on to a site like Craigslist, or what was the other one? Freelance Switch?
Yeah, Freelance Switch. You can find some writers, designers, people there, so.
Or freelancewitch.com. They look for a writer that has interest, that can write interesting content. They get them to write an article for their site that's related to their business, and then they find a person like you, and you will spread the word on all the social network sites, right?
Yeah, basically the gist of it.
How do people find people like you?
That's a good question. I mean, I suppose I know tons of them, but I guess if you were just looking from with no inside, no industry connections, go to the. I used to work at a company called SEO Moz. They have a marketplace of job postings and companies. Some of them they could recommend. There's tons of really good social media marketing companies in there. Yeah, that'd be my best advice. Or just Google around, try and find a link baiter, social media marketing guy, people like that. Stay away from any of those people who spam dig. Like, there's a difference between what I do and what other people do. Like, I don't spam dig. I don't spam any of the sites. We just typically find a user who has a solid account who can submit it for us because they have a much better chance of getting success that way.
Do you pay those users to submit? No. Okay, how much is that going to cost?
It's I don't know. It depends on the writer. I mean, from the creative side, it could be anywhere. If you hire a writer to write a blog post, it could be a couple $100, could be a couple thousand. If you hire an artist to draw something or a coder to build some link bait that's functional, that could be a couple grand. And then the promotion side, I've seen it go anywhere from a few $100 all the way up to like 15,000. So, depending on what the scope of it is.
So getting one blog post written could cost 100 to 1,000 bucks.
Depending on what it is.
And then having
Like
a
for instance, like suppose it's a blog post that analyzes some, like takes a massive amount of research. Or work. Like for instance, there was a blog post recently called "What $1 trillion Looks Like," and this guy took a $100 bill, drew it like in I think Google Sketch, and then he drew $100, and then he drew 1,000, 100,000, 1,000,000, and had it visually represented of what that would look like until he had $1 trillion that you could actually see on a scale of a human person, a human being standing next to $1 trillion. So something like that obviously would take a lot of time and a lot of research. So.
Okay. All right. So you tried that and you didn't need to hire anyone because this is what you do. And you still saw that you were getting traffic, you were getting links, but it wasn't working fast or powerfully enough. So you were getting at what the next step was. What was that next step?
Basically, what I needed was links pointing to my homepage of my dating site with the words free online dating, Seattle singles, Houston singles. I needed those words. I didn't need these kind of similar link baity words. So I stumbled upon the quiz idea. I created a quiz called How Geek Are You? And you answered a couple questions, and it would tell you on a percentage scale how geeky you were. Like, do you read sci-fi or do you play video games? Do you code? And then what the whole trick of it was. When you were done with the quiz, it would tell you are 60% geek or you are 10% geek. And it'll give you a badge. And a badge is just an HTML, it's just an image, basically. And I give you the code so you can embed that HTML on your blog. So what I was able to do was when people embed that on their blog, it would say created by Mingle2 free online dating underneath it. So I was able to build like tens of thousands of links every month with the exact anchor text I wanted to my homepage. So I was able to rank for every dating related keyword. And I was able to get users because a
Okay.
dating site without users is nothing.
All right.
So that's kind of short. It was big.
Again, I'm gonna go deep, deep, deep into this. I want to make sure that I understand it all. You developed the quiz yourself, right? How accurate are these quizzes? They're not, right?
No,
If
they're for fun.
it's a goofy quiz, how geeky are you? You come up with the questions, you come up with the results yourself, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't need anyone to you don't need a PhD to design these things.
But if we don't have if we're not developers ourselves and we had to hire someone to develop a quiz like this, what do you think that would cost?
Not much. It's a very trivial application. I would guess between maybe a couple $100 up to a couple grand, you know, depending on who it is. So they're pretty simple. The real key of the quizzes isn't the software, it's the ideas behind them. Because I've seen a lot of people try and make quizzes and fall flat on their face, so it really depends on the creativity. So,
all right, and once you develop one quiz, you've got the engine that you could use to develop several other quizzes, right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, a person does the quiz, gets his result, and you give them a little piece of code that they could put on their website so that they could show off to their friends how geeky they are.
Yep.
And that code will give them an image that says, I'm this geeky, and underneath it will be a line of text that says something like Santa Monica dating, and that line of text hyperlinks over to your website, to your homepage, right?
Yep.
And you just got a flood of people to use this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to go even deeper. How did you get the initial people to even be interested in this?
StumbleUpon was where I started. I created the quiz and I gave it a thumbs up on StumbleUpon. It's a social news site where you just randomly go to websites, and I just got a flood of traffic that way. And I did a little bit of marketing to Dig and Reddit, but mostly it was StumbleUpon in the beginning. Now I do all of them, but StumbleUpon's the easiest. It's a good place to start.
Okay. So again, if somebody is listening to this and they're not into StumbleUpon and they don't know these sites, they'd have to hire somebody, they would submit it, and hopefully it would take off like it did for you, right?
Yep.
Okay. Which quizzes did the best for you?
The best quiz I ever created was called How Many 5-Year-Olds Could You Take in a Fight? And you'd answer questions about your physical ability, how strong you are, and it would tell you could take on 18 5-Year-Olds or 5 5-Year-Olds. And it's kind of weird and it's kind of demented, but people thought it was funny. It got on Kevin Rose's Dig Nation podcast or vidcast, so he was sitting, like, I got to see Kevin Rose sitting there laughing about it, so that was cool. You know, I launched it. And I think it was 3 or 4 months after launch, after it was done, it was still getting 20,000 pages a day. And the reason that I think that one was so successful, because I've done similar ones to that one, and they always do well, any quiz that appeals to a user's sense of ability, what can they do? How smart are they? How fast are they? How strong are they? Those are the quizzes that do the best. What X are you quizzes, like what X-Men are you, or what lost character are you quizzes, those never go anywhere. I wouldn't even bother trying with those. They're just kind of overdone. So ability quizzes are where it's at.
I see. All right. Can that still work today, or is Google clamped down on those links?
That actually was my next point. I started building links. I basically ranked for every dating-related keyword. I felt like we'd kind of done that. We were good to go there. So I got a little greedy, and I decided to start building links for a payday loan site and cash advance site using the quizzes on my dating site. So it worked really well. I was able to rank number one for payday loans and cash advance, and I did it in like a little over a month, which is tough. Normally that can take years to build those kinds of links. Google didn't like that. I had some press written about me. They penalized my site. They kicked my dating site out of Google. We got back in eventually, but what I learned from that is that if you make these quizzes or you make any kind of link bait, it has to be relevant. So I can't make a payday loan site and put a quiz on it called How Much Is Your Dead Body Worth to Science? It's not relevant. Google doesn't like it. So with payday loans, you know, there's not much quiz bait you can do there. Because, I mean, unless you can come up with a really creative quiz about payday loans, you got to be careful. So that's the lesson.
I see. I actually missed a step there. So I want to make sure that I get this into the interview. As a result of getting all these links, what happened to Mingle 2 in Google? What kind of keywords did you get? Where did you show up in the results?
We showed up, I mean, basically we would pick a keyword that we knew people were searching for that would result in signups, and we would point all our quiz bait at that using the badges, and then we were able to rank number one, usually.
Give me an
so
example.
I actually ranked number one for the keyword dating for a long time, like outranking the Wikipedia entry for dating was my site. So
anytime anyone typed in dating into Google, the first result was your site.
Yep, dating, free online dating site. Seattle dating, like anything. We went for after all 50 states, major cities. So most of the keywords we dominated.
I see. And all right. And so you said, okay, I've got all the keywords that I want or as many as I can think of for dating. Payday loan sites make a lot of money. I'm now going to direct all my energies towards payday loan. And that's when you got into trouble. If you don't do that, if somebody's listening to this and says, you know, I don't care about payday loans. I just care about my business. I hear what Matthew's telling me about quizzes. I'm going to create my own quizzes and have links point back to my site. Will that work for them? Will that increase their traffic?
It should. I mean, if the quiz is creative and funny and people like it, it should do well. Just be careful. Don't make it about, try and keep it relevant to your domain. So if it's a real estate site, make a quiz about real estate. You know, don't throw crazy stuff on there. I've been penalized by Google, and it's pretty rough. I mean, you're kind of, your business is shot for months at a time waiting to hope to get back in. So keep it relevant.
But as long as they keep it relevant, it's still kosher to do that.
I think so, yeah. Google's not totally clear on it, but I've been doing it since then and kind of sticking to this loose guideline, and it's been in the clear. So,
who do you beg to at Google to get back into their good graces?
You file a Google re-inclusion request. It's a form they have, and you kind of have to plead your case. And they're pretty, most of the time they'll let you back in unless you do something really terrible. So,
but you didn't have a friend inside, you just filled out a form and that was it?
No, I had a friend. Okay. I know, I used to work at SEO Moz. So we were pretty much eyeball deep in the SEO industry all the time. So when it happened, Matt Cutts and I had a dialogue over email. He'd asked me what's going on. I said, oh, I'm spamming. He's like, oh, well, don't do that. I'm going to penalize your site. So,
I see. So you actually said, I'm spamming. He said, don't do that anymore. And then he said, let's get back into the game.
Not exactly like that, but overall, yeah. It was a weird, like, it took a few months. And he penalized one of our sites, let another one out. It was this whole weird thing. But ultimately, Mingle2 was unpenalized. So we were able to have some of our old rankings back, and we're good to go now. So, wow.
So months, you were out.
Yeah. Well, actually, the finding was that our signups only went down by 60%, which is significant, but not that bad. Like, coming from Yahoo, we still ranked at Yahoo, so we were still getting tons of signups there. It was just Google was where most of them were coming from.
Were any of your signups coming from the badges? Were people clicking on the links underneath them, coming to your site and registering, or was it all search engine?
No, it was coming from the badges too. Most of it was the search engines, but I've seen sort of a secondary benefit to these viral campaigns where you get people that they see enough quizzes from Mingle2 and they're like, I like the site, it's funny. If I'm going to try dating, I'm going to try these people rather than one of my competitors.
All right, and the first users who came to your site, whether it was from the badges or Google or one of the blog posts that they found, they were going to come to your site, type in their zip code, look for local singles, and they saw nothing, right?
Yeah, it was pretty rough. Like, in the beginning, it's tough to start a dating site because you have any users. So,
did you seed it somehow? Did you maybe buy some pictures off iStock.com and create fake users? Did you not? You didn't seed it at all.
No. I started out and I made it real obvious that this was a small site run by one guy. So I felt like I gave people very little room to complain. But what happened, actually, I had a really good thing happen, because when I built the site by myself, like I said, there weren't very many users. If you searched for singles in Seattle, you maybe had 10, 15, 30 people to choose from. So the pickings weren't very good in the beginning. But it slowly kept going. People loved the site. They recommended it. And then what happened was my site was acquired 6 months after I launched it. And when that happened, the company that acquired it had a dating site as well. And their user base, I think, was around twice the size of mine. So we were able to combine the two, which made the asset even better when we did that.
All right. I want to ask you about that, too. And I've got the chart of what happened to their traffic, but I've got more questions here about about what we've talked about so far. First, you told me that you worked on the site late at night after you finished your day job. How do you get the motivation to keep on working? A lot of people who are watching you right now are working at a job, and then they've got to come home and build their startup. How do you stay motivated? How do you stay on top of things?
Coffee, I think, helps a lot. And a lot of what I do is a hobby. You know, so for me to come home and work on it isn't necessarily a chore. It's sometimes fun. You know, I love doing design. I like writing code. So I guess the best advice I can give you is to focus on things that you love. Try and turn whatever it is, design, marketing, link bait, code, into a hobby, and then it won't be as tough. Also, I'm a big advocate of, like, if I came home at night and I was exhausted, I do want to work on my dating site. Rather than committing to, okay, I'm going to put 2 hours into my dating site, I would commit to one thing. Like, I'm going to change one database column, or I'm going to design one icon. And I did that one little thing. And every time I did that, most of the time, one little thing turned into 3 hours of work, because I just kind of get rolling and then I wouldn't stop. So start simply, I guess, is the advice I can give you.
What do you say to people who are watching this, who are sitting on a website that's been taking them some months and they're in stealth mode?
Stealth mode?
Yeah. That's been a big issue. That's been a big issue here. What do you think of stealth mode?
I'm not familiar with that. I mean, I know what that means, like,
people overall, who are building their site in quiet, in private for months.
You know, like I said before, I try and if you're building a site just by yourself, stick to a very core set of features and make those work really, really well. Don't bloat it out. Be cautious about getting feedback from friends and family and extended people. I found, like, the fewer people that are involved in the critique of a design or a product, sometimes the better. Like, a good set of three or four really smart people works, but if you email everybody, it can be kind of terrible. So that's my advice.
How'd you know what the core features were? I mean, I know I asked you about that before, but it seems tougher than... It seems tough to figure out the core features and focus just on those.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I knew from using dating sites, I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew, like, from using those other sites, like, I only need these things. I need to see pictures of these people. I need to see where they're from, what they're about, and I need to be able to search within a radius of my house. So sticking to that generally seemed to work pretty well. Also, one of the other problems I saw with a lot of dating sites is they required you to kind of write this huge diet, you know, this huge message to somebody else if you wanted to talk to them. So you message a girl, she's totally hot, and you have to write all this crap to her, like, how are you? Where are you from? Do you like snowboarding? Do you like sushi? Blah, blah, blah. And then she wouldn't write back. Or she'd write back with, no, or something like that. So for men, it was incredibly frustrating because they have to pour their hearts out in these extended messages and get nothing back. So one of the features that Match.com had and a few other sites have is, like, nudges, or what they are like simple pokes where you just can kind of, like, jab somebody and say, are you interested? And if they jab you back, then you talk. So I implemented something like that right away because I knew that was a feature people wanted. Sort of a passive way of saying hi.
You know, I asked Craig of Craigslist if he met his current girlfriend on Craigslist, and he says that there's nothing wrong with doing that, but he feels that he shouldn't be getting dates on his own sites. Did you get a date off of Mingle too?
Yeah, I did. How'd that Actually, go my current you? Girlfriend I met there. Well, one of them was not so good, but one of them worked out really well. The girl I'm dating now, I met there. She's great, so it's kind of creepy. I agree, but I don't know. She doesn't seem to mind, so.
I don't think there's anything creepy about it. I think you're using your own stuff. It proves it works. We talked about Plenty of Fish. Plenty of Fish, you said, makes 8 figures. Mingle 2 didn't.
So, yeah. What's that?
Mingle 2 didn't bring in millions a year in profits. It didn't do as well as Plenty of Fish financially. Why?
Plenty of Fish has, in my opinion, they have a bit of critical mass right now. You know, they've got enough users rolling forward that he can actually make those earnings, and he kind of dominates Canada at the moment. In the United States, he hasn't quite penetrated like he has Canada. We're still in our infancy, you know? Our site is, almost to the day, 2 years old. I think it was mid-March when I launched it. So we're still getting there. We do get, in terms of traffic, we get over 40 million page views a month. And we're closing in on our millionth member. So in terms of revenue, we're not replenty fishes, though. But we'll hopefully get there.
How much revenue did you have per month before you sold it?
The first couple months was, like, you know, nothing. We're talking a couple $100 from AdSense. When I sold it, I think I was making, it was between $3,000 and $5,000 a month. So it was still pretty low. But it was enough that if I wanted to, could have quit my day job, you know.
And Plenty of Fish, from what I understand, gets his users not through SEO the way you do, but through affiliate programs. He pays a bounty. Every time someone sends him a new member, I think he pays anywhere from $1 to $3.50. That's a broad range, but I don't remember the actual number, but I do think that's the way he gets his members. Am I right?
Yeah, it's a mixture of that. He does do some SEO, however. I think in the beginning he was more aggressive about SEO than he is now, because now he doesn't rank particularly well.
Is search engine optimization, is SEO really tough to do in this space?
Yeah, it's real competitive. There's a lot of people doing it. There's a big balance between short tail and long tail keywords. Short tail keywords being dating, free online dating, free dating site. Long tail being New York Jewish singles or Seattle gay dating, words like that. Both sides of the equation are pretty competitive.
Yeah, it's amazing that people still will type into Google Seattle Jewish dating instead of just saying, I need a dating site. I'll go over to one of the big ones and then I'll look for whoever I need.
Yeah, I know there's a huge market for it too. You'd be surprised, especially long tail. People search for all kinds of stuff. Indeed.
All right, let's see. What else do I have here in my notes to ask you about? What else do you know about Plenty of Fish? What do you see that he's doing right?
I love the fact that he's always kept it small, one person. I'm a big fan of doing that. Not necessarily one person, but keeping things really, really, like keeping a small team of multi-talented people. I just feel like as a company, you can be so much more agile that way. You can make quick decisions, see if they work, and then fall back if they don't, rather than somewhere like, I don't know, Microsoft, where if you want to make a design change, you have a meeting of meetings of meetings, and you wait 2 years for it to happen. So that is my probably the thing that I love the most about Plenty of Fish, is the fact that he's kept it small. And the product works, for the most part, despite looking horrible.
Yeah, it's amazing how small it still is today, and it's amazing how ugly it still is today, but it works really well.
Yeah.
All right, I'm looking at the graph here that shows what happened before and after you were acquired by JustSayHi.com. Mm-hmm. And you've written some notes, you've annotated it, and you explained what happened at each stage of this graph. And right here, I see something that says, acquisition discussions begin, I throttle back my marketing efforts. Is that really you throttling back your marketing efforts, or is that Google penalizing you?
No, the penalty didn't happen until about 6 months after that. That was me realizing I was going to sell Mingle 2 and not wanting to put any more massive viral work onto it until I figured out what was going to happen. So viral traffic spikes up and down. You kind of have to keep going at it. So that was just me kind of pulling back temporarily.
Why? What does it mean to throttle back? It means not creating as many quizzes? It means
not creating as many quizzes and link bait, just kind of temporarily putting a hold on any new stuff. So most of the viral traffic I was getting was just runoff from previous campaigns that I'd done.
But Matthew, am I missing something? It doesn't seem like it takes a long time to create one of these quizzes. I feel like I could do it over breakfast.
It doesn't take long, but I mean, at the time, you know, I had a full-time job, and like I said, I just wanted to wait and see what would happen. Like, I felt like I had, you know, I've got a huge notebook full of great ideas of quizzes and link bait. I didn't necessarily want to put them on Mingle 2 if I knew it was going to go to Just Say Hi. I'd rather have them get that credit. So I just wanted to hold off.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Why'd you sell instead of build it out on your own?
The people who acquired it, they had a team, or they had the logistics in place to fight spam better than I could. And they had a lot of things that they'd already gone through that I didn't want to go through. I was spending, right before I sold it, I was spending an hour a day at least fighting Nigerian spammers, South African spammers, just writing filters on my site, trying to get rid of them. That was one of the things that they'd already accomplished. They just had no problem with spam. So being able to utilize that, utilize their user base, and then the payout were the three big reasons that I wanted to sell.
What was the payout?
I can't say.
Is it hundreds of thousands? Was it tens of thousands?
I'm sorry, dude. I can't. I don't think I can say much. So
you can't even say that it was over a million or under. Over, under.
I can say it was under a million.
It was under a million.
Yeah. The site was still small, so.
Why didn't you, and now you're working for them, right?
Yep.
Why aren't you creating the next business, the next internet company?
You mean for them, or what do you mean?
For you. I mean, you had a hit here. It took you, it took you just a few hours to do it, under 70 hours, as I say. It doesn't take a long time. There are tons of other businesses that you could get into. Why not do the next one?
Well, honestly, I actually have been with them, though. We started building a recipe community recently that we're going to launch. Again, it's another free based site, so it's a free recipe site. As far as doing it myself or working with a larger company, you know, I've debated that as well. If I can code, design, and market, why should I commit to an employer? There's security in having a full-time job. I like the guys I work with. I feel like we're all on the same page. So that's kind of short of it.
Okay. Why recipes, by the way? I keep hearing about recipe sites. What kind of business is that?
Yeah, there's a lot of SEO potential there. You know, and my businesses tend to lately bank on the success of our SEO campaigns. So that was the key choice behind going after recipes. That and we already have a lot of community software, forums, messaging, searching, everything. Like, we felt like it was almost a lateral move to dating, like a lot of the stuff we could borrow and share. So, and it would be a fun site, and it's easy to link bait for recipes. Like, we built a a coupon site a couple months ago. I wasn't really involved in it. I was just supposed to be making link bait for it. It's really hard to make link bait about coupons, like saving money. And I don't think I've ever used a coupon, you know, like, so recipes, on the other hand, I mean, I can make so much link bait about that. Like I'm going to make something called 10 ways bacon can save your life and draw bacon saving people's lives. Ridiculous stuff like that that does really well. I'm making a quiz actually right before this call called How Long Could You Survive Trapped in Your Kitchen Freezer? And it would ask you like how much you weigh, and it would tell you you could survive for, you know, 11 hours trapped in your kitchen freezer. So this is a medium that I feel is way more conducive to link baiting and SEO than some of the other commercial properties we could go after.
And again, that's an ability, not a personality. It's how long can you survive? That's what you said earlier, that you've got to focus on quizzes that are ability-based.
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than what food are you, you know what I mean? Or what sandwich are you? This will work much better. So.
All right, Matthew, now let's teach people what you know, how they could do some of this stuff. I keep hearing about viral, link baiting, social media. People who are watching this and listening to it want to know how they could do it. Can you teach them? What's the first thing that we need to know about link baiting?
You know, all link baiting really is creating something creative or funny or interesting or anything that arouses any kind of emotion, even if it's anger, on a website with the intention of garnishing links to that site. So, you know, my advice is if you have a commercial property, some sort of website, try and think of something outrageous and put that on there. Start out with blog posts. Write a blog post that's, you know, crazy or weird or interesting, something people want to read, and try submitting that to a few social media sites. StumbleUpon's a good one to start with. You just install the StumbleUpon toolbar. It's free. You write a blog post, and you give it the thumbs up in StumbleUpon. It's a really, really good place to start. If you want examples of some link bait that's not necessarily like mine, like quizzes and comics, check out cracked.com. They are a website that they almost have like a formula for how their articles are written. Like it's always the same. Top 10 most annoying gaming villains. Top 10 ways to do this using that. They're always these top 10 lists. Really easily digestible material to read. And they always do really well. So that's a good place to start.
Okay, and well, actually, you're still doing these. You're still creating these link bait articles, and we're going to learn how to do that. But you also said that it doesn't work as well because you can't dictate what kind of anchor text people link to you with. So yeah. With the dating example, they might link over to your website when you created a link bait. But they weren't linking over to you saying, here's a great website, or here's a website for New York singles. Mm-hmm. So does it still work? Does it matter?
Yeah, it does. Well, keep in mind with dating, like I said before, it's a really competitive niche. So to rank in dating, you have to have brute force links going to your own page. With other verticals, it's not as tough. Like, for instance, if you have a site that sells gardening equipment, if you wrote a blog post about, I don't know, top 10 ways to fight zombies using gardening equipment. I don't know, something like that. The links you'd get from that wouldn't be directed to your homepage with gardening equipment necessarily, but they could be similar enough that it would actually boost your rankings if it wasn't the keyword wasn't particularly competitive. So it doesn't, like, yeah, basically in dating, blog bait, not necessarily going to work, but in other verticals, could work really well. Also, in SEO, you know, there are links that there's a lot of factors that influence how you rank. The anchor text of links pointing to a specific page is one, but also the overall trust of a domain is another, how much Google trusts a domain, and they use a lot of factors to determine that, but one of which is links, overall links. If your site's getting linked to all over the place for years and years, they tend to trust it more and it'll rank better. So if you like blog posts, link bait blog posts, get links to those, that could influence your trust with the search engines.
Are people who aren't doing this kidding themselves because they're competing against people like you? So if you're working with a gardening site and you're creating these vampire and all kinds of other link bait posts, and there's a guy out there who's got just a regular old gardening site, and he's commenting on other people's blogs because he heard that that's a good way to get traffic, and he's writing good articles because he heard that's a good way to get traffic, and he's maybe writing on message boards, is he kidding himself? Is he ever going to rank for anything in search engines?
If he's up against me, I mean, I'm one of the best link baiters around. So, I mean, I build links for really, really high-end commercial keywords. But, you know, for a smaller niche site, I mean, he'd probably be fine. There's not a lot of people in the world that do exactly what I do. So I don't think so. I don't think he's kidding himself. Do definitely balance it. You know, don't just go and write comments on message boards and stuff. Try doing what I do. Try writing blog posts. Try creating link bait. Submit it to someone. Try Reddit, you know? There's a lot of different ways that you can market a site other than just dropping links, so.
But if they were to go up against you, they would be dead. Would they be toast? Is that fair enough to say?
I don't know. That's...
Let's not say just about you. Chris Winfield, who introduced me to you, Tony Adam, who talked to me about you in our interview, any one of you three or anyone who's in your category, if a regular person who's just commenting on blogs and going in message boards is going up against you guys, is it fair to say that they're toast?
Yeah, I think so. Link bait versus traditional link building in that regard, yeah, I don't think I don't think they would do particularly well against me.
Okay, so let's learn a little bit more about how to do that. So you said top 10 links, top 10 lists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be shocking.
Yep.
What else? Do you have any formulas, like cracked my...
Yeah, so, well, here, just, I know that, you know, I'm trying not to drop any links, but on my website, matthewinman.com/everything, I have a huge list of examples of my work, and it's all over the place. Writing funny comics, writing sensational blog posts, taking data, some piece of data, and reformatting it in an interesting way. Like I was telling you about the $1 trillion thing. You know, what $1 trillion looks like visually, that's a very simple number. It's a very simple piece of data. But the way they presented it made it viral and huge. Another example, I have a friend, Vince Blackham. He made a chart of common skateboarding injuries. So what he did was he took, like, injuries to the head, injuries to the chest, I don't know, broken arms, and he plotted them on a skeleton and then had this kind of visual graph of which ones occur the most. So it's a very simple piece of data that's out there, but it did really well. I mean, I saw him on Twitter about it, and he was saying that he got 100,000 page views in the first couple hours. So take data, it's already there, reformat it in a different way. That's another tactic you can try.
Okay. What else? What else? If you're sitting at your desk and you're staring at a blank screen and mm-hmm. you've got writer's block, do you have a couple of techniques that you go to?
Yeah. One of the best things that I've done is I take whatever commercial topic I have. So let's say, like I just did when I was talking about gardening equipment, I take that specific keyword or idea and I attach something crazy to it. Oftentimes I do this by making word lists. Like I have a giant notepad and I'll write down things like beef, death, space, black hole, I don't know, kittens. And then I'll have a commercial keyword and actually like try and draw where things can overlap and sort of brainstorm that way. Look at popular movies, try and connect it to media, like, try and associate film with your topic, try and associate music with it. Anything geeky, like whatever geeks are into. Geeks use social media sites, geeks use blogs. So if you can start with geek content and attach your keyword to that, usually does really, really well.
Okay, so you might have cats on your list and you might have gardening equipment and you try to find a way to combine the two into a blog post. Gardening equipment that cats could use. Gardening equipment that, what else? I don't have anything, actually. I'm not good
at this. How many angry kittens could you fight off using a hoe?
Gotcha.
There you go. Something like that. I know that's kind of an odd example, but I'm just kind of throwing them out there. So, but that's how my mind works. You know, I create... I take whatever commercial keyword it is, and I come up with something strange, and I attach it to it. Whatever makes me laugh usually works best. Like, I stick to humor most of the time, but link bait doesn't have to be funny necessarily. It can be useful, too.
All right. This reminds me a lot of that show, I think it was a movie called Late Shift, about how Letterman got pushed out of the late night slot on NBC. And I remember watching him with his writers in a room, and they would just try to tie in all kinds of news stories in with their jokes and come up with something creative. What I'm trying to say is that what you're doing sounds a lot more creative than I think most people are capable of being. I don't think most people can figure out how to tie gardening equipment with cats in a second the way that you just did, or how to write most of these posts. So instead of teaching them how to do it, which I think might be beyond the scope of this interview, maybe we need to teach them where they can go and buy this stuff and focus a little bit more on that. So they go to Craigslist. That's a place. How about ProBlogger.net and post a blog, post something on there? Is that possible?
I'm not really that familiar with ProBlogger, so I can't really speak to that.
Okay. SEOmoz.com?
Yeah, or SEOmoz.org. The marketplace has a lot of people that specialize in link baiting, social media marketing. You can find someone to promote it there, for sure. A lot of the SEO conferences have, you know, like SMX, SES, have tons of sessions on these kinds of things where you can find people that are really good at it, too. Twitter is a good way to find link baiters, social media marketing people as well. Like, find some of the people that are really vocal about it, have a good presence. See, you know, go check out their company website. See if you can find someone that way.
Okay. And it might cost anywhere from $100 to $1,000 per post. You got to negotiate it one-on-one with them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you could submit it yourself using StumbleUpon and the other services, or you could find someone like you, Matthew, right?
Yeah, yeah. StumbleUpon you can do yourself pretty easily. Dig, though, doing it yourself, unless you have a pretty good account, is kind of tough. So you might need someone who uses Dig regularly, who knows when and how to submit it to help you out.
But StumbleUpon, I could just hit the up arrow on my own content. No one's going to be upset because I'm thumbsing up, giving a thumbs up to my own content. No one's going to be upset because I'm self-promoting.
Not usually. If you stumble like 12 blog posts from the same blog, and that's all you ever stumble, they won't count it. But if you use StumbleUpon naturally, like a regular user, and you stumble your own content, they won't care.
I see.
Just make it look natural.
Is it fair to say that part of that is because they're owned by eBay, and eBay doesn't have the patience to police it as well as Dig, which is self-owned?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it like that. I've always just thought of StumbleUpon as this wonderful little nice, huge website that doesn't care about people, you know, saturating it. But I don't know why they don't police it as heavily. Maybe it's just not spammed as heavily. Dig gets a lot more credit than StumbleUpon does. Even though I think technically StumbleUpon has more users than Dig, Dig seems to attract way more marketers than StumbleUpon does.
All right, you mentioned comics. You're just talking about standard old comics, pencil on paper, comics?
Not exactly. A good example, like I said, on my everything page, I have a ton of them there, but one of the more popular ones I did was, there was one called 10 Reasons It Would Rule to Date a Unicorn, where most of my comics are the same format. They're like slides, like 10 slides, and it'll all be about the same thing. Like I did one called Things Bears Love, like 8 Things Bears Love. And I drew like things that bears like overweight campers or people that are out of shape that go hiking, wrestling matches, just ridiculous stuff. And I always present them in the same format, and they do really, really well. I don't do a lot of pencil. For some reason, I can draw well on a computer, but you put me on a sheet of paper, they just look terrible. So.
And you're actually drawing it. You could just say things bears love and have a picture of a kid, but you're drawing it is what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Things bears love. How does that tie in with any one of your sites? Or does it matter?
Actually, Things Bears Love was a prototype. What I wanted to do was try and sell merchandise with it. So I launched the site, and at the bottom of it, we had t-shirts for sale, similar to like Threadless. So one of the things that bears love was boomboxes, and it had a bear like holding a boombox up over his head with just dead bodies everywhere, and it said Music for the Slaughter. And so for shirts, we had a boombox shirt with a bear holding a boombox, and it said Bears Love Boomboxes. That was the goal behind that one. There was no SEO goal. I didn't want to rank for bears. I didn't want to rank for anything related to bears. It was more just, let's see how much traffic I can throw at this page, and let's see if I can sell t-shirts from that.
How much money did you make from t-shirts from that page?
Not very much. That prototype, that's why it was a prototype. So I was seeing it. Social media traffic doesn't convert very well. So some of my quizzes, you know, like I was saying earlier, they can get between 1 million and 6 million page views per comic. So with bears, I think we ended up doing, in the first week, it got about 500,000 page views, so it was okay. But sales from that were terrible. People that visit social media just don't, you know, they're not really commercially oriented. They're more looking for fun. So.
So from 500,000 page views, how many t-shirts could you sell?
I think it was like 40, something like that. And we only sold them for a day or two before we're like, let's turn this off. I don't want to ship any more of these. So. But it was a good test, seeing if it would work. I'm going to try it again, probably, but what I'm going to do is make a book out of it rather than shirts.
Why? Why a book?
I think it would be better. I think it would sell better if I, like a t-shirt is wearing a t-shirt about a comic you read is kind of odd. Like I, even if I really like a comic, I don't think I would wear a t-shirt from it, but having a coffee table book of like 12 of these comics, I think would be a lot better. People would be more willing to read that or buy that. So my plan is, my grand plan, in about 6 weeks, I'm going to make three or four comics, release them online, hopefully get a couple million page views to them, and then have a book of them that has about 12 and sell the remaining 12 in a book. So again, it's a new business for me, but hopefully it'll work. I'm usually stick with SEO, but with this, I feel like I'm going to try something a little different. So.
And it seems like that's a lot of what you do. You're just testing things out, seeing what works, exploring what you're passionate about in the moment.
Yeah, you know, like I was saying, I'm a big fan of keeping things small and agile, so you can try things, iterate. If it fails, you didn't put much time into it. If it does well, awesome. You know, you've got a product, and you didn't have to spend a year building it. So,
okay, I've got a few examples here of people who've been on Mixergy.com, and I want to ask you about how they could use what we've learned here in this interview. So, can I hit you with a few company names? And
sure,
what they do?
Sure.
All right, let's try it. So Edufire, John Bischke, founder of Edufire, came to Mixergy to talk about how he built up a site for online video learning. So he's got a website. You can go on there and you can learn how to use your Mac. You can learn from an instructor how to speak a foreign language. You could learn how to be a digital nomad and travel the world. Great educational website. How can he use link baiting and some of the other techniques that you taught here to get more traffic to his site?
So I'm assuming, you know, if he's trying to sell based on keywords such as, you said there was some language courses in there, like learning foreign languages, trying to rank those keywords at Google. So if he wanted to rank for learn Japanese or Japanese online language courses, he's going to need links for that kind of thing. So, I mean, one place he could start is to create link bait about language or create link bait about that kind of thing. Like make a quiz called how worldly is your ability to say hello, and make a quiz where you test how many languages they can say hello in, you know, and post the quiz results. And if you post those quiz results in a batch, he might get away with being able to link back with online language courses or something like that. And he'll be able to rank and be able to sell more. So that's what I would do.
Okay. We've got Deep from gogreensolar.com. He's got a website which sells equipment that will let you go green, like, solar panels, light that's better for the environment, that kind of thing.
That's easy, man. I've already done one like this. It's called How Much Electricity Could Your Body Produce? And what I did was I asked people about how much they weigh, what their heart rate is. I have them actually measure their heart rate when they take the quiz. And I would tell them in watts, I think it was watts, how much electricity their body would produce. And then I would say, your body could power one Xbox 360, or your body could power an iPod. You know what I mean? So for him, again, sticking to the ability quizzes or viral-like aspect of it, I would make a quiz called, you know, like how much electricity could your body produce, and maybe compare it to a solar power thing or somehow integrate it with solar.
Oh, cool.
The ability of the human body to be a giant battery. That's what I would do.
Okay. Website called Tweetizen. What it does is it creates chat rooms using Twitter. So what could we use the chat room for? Actually, we're going to use it in future interviews here on Mixergy. If anyone wants to watch the videos live and chat, they can use their Twitter account, chat, and the chat board will be embedded on the site. So how can he use link baits to get traffic to site? Link baiting.
Actually, that's cool that he's building that, because that's one of my complaints about Twitter is there's oftentimes not much context to a conversation. So to group it together is really cool. Twitter, a lot of people don't discover... new features with Twitter and new Twitter spin-off sites using Google. They just don't. They use it. They find it through word of mouth on Twitter. So as far as a link bait strategy for a Twitter product, I don't know if there is much of one, just because there's no keywords. No one's going to be searching for Twitter chat room. You know what I mean? Like maybe some people will, but even if they are, you'll probably rank for it anyway because that's not a very tough keyword. So my advice is for him to stick to Twitter and try and get as many of his friends using that specific software as possible and have people like you integrating it with their site, more so than an SEO strategy.
And by the way, for that and anything that's integrated to the site, does it make sense to have a link underneath it that points back to your site with whatever text you want?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good point. If you know, if this Twitter thing can somehow be rebranded in other places, on other websites, link back to your homepage with the anchor text Twitter chat or Twitter chat room or something like that. That'll boost your search rankings. But like I said, if the product's good enough and it's a Twitter app, you should rank anyway. Like, it shouldn't be that hard to rank naturally without any sort of SEO work.
All right. What about Mixergy? I do interviews for people who are building startups. What can I do?
I mean, you could do yours actually, because I don't know if, again, there's a whole lot of organic SEO for people searching specifically for keywords that are relevant to you. So, you know, if I had a site like that, I would stick more to a viral. I would stick more to link bait that's not really intended for links. It's intended for exposure. So in that case, you're actually free to do a lot more things than people that with links are. So you could write sensational blog posts. You could do something like, I've actually already seen articles like this, but the top 10 biggest startup failures in the .com boom. And then maybe the top 10 companies most likely to fail, or to the top 10 most startups most likely to collapse in the next 3 years or go under. You know what I mean? Companies have just got tons of buzz right now, but don't have much cash coming in. Sensational blog posts like that probably do pretty well.
All right. And let's suppose that I or any one of these people wanted to just hire somebody to take care of this whole thing A to Z. Is there a shop that we can go to the way we can go and buy advertising through an agency, or the way we can go have our sites designed through an agency, or do we just have to figure it all out on our own?
No, there's companies that can do it for you. Like I said, check out the SEO Moz Marketplace. There's a whole list of companies there that specialize in this kind of thing. I do some of it. I don't do much consulting, but I do a little bit. There's also a guy, the company in Utah called Utah SEO Pro. They do a lot of this kind of thing. They specialize in link baiting, social media marketing. 10E20 by Chris Winfield, also another one. So I could name a bunch. I'm forgetting them all. But SEO Moz Marketplace is probably a better place to look than me just trying to remember a few. So.
All right. I want to be fair with your time, so we're coming up on the end of the interview. Is there anything that I missed, anything that people need to know that I didn't think to ask?
I think we're pretty good. You know, like I said, for a lot of examples, check out matthewinman.com/everything. Tons of inspiration there. Check out crack.com for a good like way to write link bait articles. SEO Moz Marketplace for a company to promote it. Yeah, I think that's about the gist of it. So.
Okay. Just making sure that I link over to matthewinman.com/everything so people can see what we've been talking about. Cool. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for doing this interview with me. This has been great.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, and there's the interview. So what'd you think? Come back to Mixergy.com and give me your feedback. Is this information that you can use? If it is, use it and come back to Mixergy and tell me how you used it. If it's not, and some people don't think that all these interviews are useful, and they email me. I'd love to hear from you. Come back and email me. Also, go back to Mixergy.com, post where you found this interview, and add your comments. I'd love to hear from you there too. It's a great way, by the way, to connect with the people whose interviews you hear. If you go back to the post where you heard them and you write your comment, I can tell you that I can almost guarantee you that they're reading what you have to say. Finally, go to matthewinman.com/everything. He keeps saying that in the interview. There must be something great there, and I think you should go check it out. All right, I said that's the end of it, but I hope that there's one more thing that you'll do. Go back to Mixergy.com and download some of the other interviews that I do. I do interviews with people who are really in the trenches, who are out there building internet companies every day. They've got to prove themselves, and then they come here on Mixergy and they teach you what they've learned, and man, is it useful. All right, thanks for listening to this interview, and I'll see you on Mixergy.com.